On the show today, we have Brightwell's Larry Hipp talking about disruption taking place in global payments in terms of financial empowerment and inclusion that fintech is making possible. So check it out. Hey everybody, Mike Lawson here with CU Broadcast. Welcome to our show. And on today's program, we have Brightwell's very own Larry Hipp. Larry, how are you, sir?
Hey, doing great today, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. Thanks for asking. Hey, we are talking about disruption taking place in global payments in terms of financial empowerment and inclusion that fintech is making possible. So I find this a very fascinating topic and something that you know very, very well. So what is this disruption of global payments in terms of financial empowerment and inclusion? And can you kind of expand on this for folks out there?
Sure. 2019 has been a pretty interesting year. The landscape of global payments has been changing quite a bit. Right? Mm-hmm. We've seen disruptors come into the marketplace from startups that are super well funded to startups that are not very well funded, really challenging the Western Union, the MoneyGrams. The people have been doing this for a long time, right? And they're challenging on a bunch of fronts. It's, hey, we're going to acquire customers in a different way. We're going to give them a different value proposition. We're going to give them a better product in some regards, and that's a subjective thing for a lot of people on what better product is. But there's really a lot of companies coming into the marketplace right now saying, hey, we can do this too, and we're going to go after your users, and we're going to challenge your business models, and they're growing really, really fast.
Yeah. So is this a threat to the traditional services that have been out there for decades and decades, or is it an opportunity? Because there's a lot of in our neck of the woods, in credit unions, when the fintechs first came onto the scene, they were like, oh my gosh, they're going to take over the world. But now the pendulum has kind of swung to the other side, where like, hey, let's partner and make this work for both sides. So what are you seeing out there?
So I think in the short term, let's say the next 24, 36 months, it's certainly opportunity.
Yeah.
And I think what a lot of the fintechs are running up into is we want to do something really, really great and fun and exciting for our users. But guess what? There are these things called regulators. And these regulators are saying, hey, time out. I know that you've just raised a bunch of money and you want to go really, really, really fast. There's a way we do this to make sure that our consumers are protected. Mm-hmm. And what you're seeing is are kind of odd bedfellows here, right? Where you've got, you know, a traditional working, you know, an incumbent that's been around for a very long time. Maybe it's a big bank, maybe it's a fintech, maybe it's like a Western Union. Right. And all of a sudden they're partnering with a fintech, right? Yeah. Or they're somewhere behind the scenes. You've got a money mover from around the world using this big old bank that could probably move the money themselves. Mm-hmm. Behind the scenes, you've got this fintech kind of disrupting a user experience and a user acquisition. And so I think that we're going to see over the next 12 to 24 months, a lot of these partnerships still being there, which creates a lot of opportunity. Yeah. Question's going to be what happens 24 months from now, 36 months from now, when some of these fintechs get regulated. You know, then they might start to converge a little bit. But right now, I think we're seeing a lot of cooperation in more so than we've ever seen before, where the incumbents were maybe guarding what they had a little closely, mm-hmm. but now they're starting to play nicely, and we're going to see what happens in another 24, 36 months.
Yeah, we're all in the sandbox right now playing nicely, but yeah, like you said, in the next couple of years, 3 years, we'll see what happens. So how are fintechs making all of this possible, though? Because at the end of this, it says, you know, fintech is, you know, that fintech is making this possible. So how are they making it possible? Is it the new ways? Is it the Uberization, as everyone's talking about, of everything now? Is that how it's working, or?
Yeah, I mean, I think the easiest way to think about it is, if you think of one of the big incumbents, right, they've got decades in often cases of just a machine, right, and they've got these big businesses that have to be fed kind of every day, right? I mean, if you're a money mover, specifically kind of thinking about money that moves across borders, you've got an agent network around the globe that you have to feed, mm-hmm. right? Like, that is a part of your business. And the fintechs have come in and they've said, well, we can start from kind of line zero of code. We don't have any of that baggage to worry about. We can go 100% digital. We don't have to worry about this big business model that we're disrupting. It's the same innovator's dilemma, right? A famous book that's been around for a very long time. Yeah. They've just come in and said, look, we can start over. And we don't have to use the legacy system that you're using, so it gives us an advantage to move a little bit faster.
Yeah, that's what I hear. That's what I hear too. And so, how is all this impacting banks and credit unions? I mean, again, I think we talked about it at the top of the show with the initial fear of the fintechs, but now we're all kind of playing in the sandbox. So, how else is it impacting banks and credit unions today?
So if you think about the challenger banks, right, the neobanks, they're much more common in Europe, and they've been on the rise in Europe for the last couple of years, but they are all coming to the U.S. Right? So N26 is here now. If you just saw recent news, Chime just had an announcement about how they've raised a lot of money to move. I think how it affects the banks here locally in the States, it's going to be the challengers are coming. And you've got to figure out how you're going to, you know, provide something to your customers that the challengers are providing as well. Yeah. And that's going to be hard, especially when you go into the community banking market, maybe the credit union market, where a lot of the software that they use comes from one or two places.
Yep.
Right? Does Jack Henry have it? Yes. Okay, well, I can offer it to my customers, mm-hmm. right? And so it's one of these things that I think is going to be interesting over the next couple of years when we think about the banking institutions that we know very well. Mm-hmm. And as challengers come in, how do they work together?
Yeah.
And, you know, about somebody like Chime and even somebody like Brightwell, we work with established banks behind the scenes. And so we have a partnership with those. And, you know, there's only so many fintechs and so many banks that you can partner with type thing. I mean, there's way more banks than there are fintechs.
Yeah.
But I do think that this challenger bank that's coming and it's making its way to the U.S. Is going to be something that we have to reckon,
Agreed, because the consumer out there is getting more and more savvy with this stuff as we, you know, work more and more with Amazon, again, Uber and Airbnb, all these new easy to use services out there. This is becoming expected in every part of our lives, whether it's, you know, healthcare, finance, all this stuff, you know, and so when you go to your credit union or your bank, you're expecting the same type of thing. So
yeah, I was actually at a bank just yesterday and we were discussing kind of the challengers, and you know, there's a lot of writing right now that the millennial crowd, right, there's a lot of talk about the millennials these days, the way that that crowd and maybe even the crowd below them, mm-hmm. I think the Gen Zers,
yeah.
The way they think about finances is totally different than the generations that were there ahead of them, right?
Yeah.
And so you might find that there's a certain persona of user that is, hey, I'm going to walk into my brick and mortar bank. I know my banker. I'm always going to go into that. I would never put my money anywhere that's not in a bank. And then you got a whole new consumer that's rapidly becoming the most dominant consumer that I don't need a bank. I've got an app for that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Grew up in the app for that now generation. And so it's an interesting transition, not only at the fintechs, you know, out there creating new landscapes, but it's the consumer is changing.
Yeah. Cause in our house we have, you know, we have college kids and high school kids, that type of stuff. And the term in our house is, hey, can you Venmo me that?
Yeah.
I mean, Venmo is becoming a verb in our house. So, that's a, you know, totally new thing from when I was a kid, you know, it's like, hey, ATM was the big thing when I was a kid. So that's how far back I go.
Yeah. Venmo is an interesting one because when you think about them from a banking perspective, Venmo is a verb in our house as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have a babysitter that we use often, and every time she comes over, we'll Venmo her, you know, the money we pay for babysitter.
Right.
And Venmo is doing everything they can right now to say, plant the seed in that individual.
Oh yeah.
To get your Venmo card.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you don't need to go get a bank. Just keep it all right here.
Right.
And so Venmo is one of these little sneaky ones because while they're a peer-to-peer company, they're also starting to move their way towards, hey, you can get yourself a Venmo card, and once you have a card and you can move money to everybody, you're starting to see these like transformations of the fintechs also becoming challenger banks.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, that's kind of one of these things that I see happening in 2020 is these things that you're using right now for one thing,
right,
starting to morph into something that's a little bit more, kind of trying to find a bigger share of what you're doing with your finances.
Yeah, like, I mean, obviously Amazon is doing some stuff in this. There's just so many of the big players that are diving into this as well. So yeah, lots of stuff to be looking at in 2020 for sure. And speaking of 2020, so what lessons have been learned that banks and credit unions are leveraging heading into 2020 to continue to make this impact and gain more customers or members with the routes paved by fintech first? So what lessons have been learned here?
Yeah, I would say from a bank and credit union perspective, right?
Yeah.
The fintechs are clearly showing that your user experience has to adapt.
Oh yeah.
And you know, the banking model, I use a very traditional bank for all of my banking needs, and I log into it and it serves my purposes. but my, you know, my children and any of the kids that are getting bank accounts these days, they're going to require a different experience. And so a lot of times when I think of larger banks and maybe kind of regional community banks on down, there's horizon planning. There's planning for the year two, year three, year four out the door. And it's, you need to start now thinking about how do I adapt my user experience to be, you know, not just here's the information, here's your balance, here's your statement, here's your transactions, but how do you make it more interactive? I think there's a huge opportunity for the software providers that provide the services to these banks and credit unions and community banks and even larger banks to say, hey, we can give you a product that you can offer to your customers that kind of gets the user experience that the users are wanting these days.
Can they do that? I mean, a lot of, you know, back in the, when the Great Recession was going on, it's like, hey, too big to fail. But are some of these financial institutions too big to change? Or because a lot of the fintechs, they're very agile. They can move, they can turn on a dime, basically. So some of them, it's like, you know, it's like turning an oil tanker around trying to get them to change. So is that a possibility, or is it, are the fintechs too nimble here?
You know, I think the big established companies and the big established banks that are out there, they know the change is coming.
Yeah.
And you know, what I think, if I had a crystal ball, I don't, but if I had a prediction, right, I think that we'll see, you know, they'll be a little slow to make the turn, but they're doing the work now.
Right.
And for them, where a fintech may pop up next week, you've never even heard of them, and the next thing you know, they're you know, signing up customers left and right. The banks that are out there today, they know it's coming.
Yeah.
They're working on it, right? Yeah. They took a ton behind the scenes to all of a sudden get there. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, I don't think that the big established institutions out there aren't watching, right? I think that's the thing that we're starting to see as well. At Money 2020, you could see the big banks even trying to start to present themselves a little bit different way, right? And the people they want to be on stage with in a little different way. Yeah. I think it'll take them a little bit longer to get there. I think you'll see the fintechs popping off left and right with something new that they're doing.
Yeah.
But the machine is going to have to turn. You're going to have to turn the tank around, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And personally, a lot of the people in our network, we know they're working on it. The question is just how fast can they get there?
Yeah, and my concern is not the bigger folks out there, because I know they have the resources to do all that stuff, is the smaller financial institutions, the small credit unions and the small community banks. Are they able to adapt? And if so, how, or how scary is this for them?
It's scary in the sense that most of the software that they provide, right, most of the user interface that they provide for their customers comes from somebody else.
Yeah.
Right. They're not building their own software. They don't have a fintech team that's standing up, you know, hey, we're going to build a new mobile app and give it to our customers. No, these things come from a few places.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from Jack Henry's. It comes from the Fiserv's. It comes from your core banking platform. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, is it scary to think about that user experience might get gobbled up by a fintech when I don't have control over my own destiny? Yeah, I would imagine it may be a little scary, right?
Yeah.
And I would say if I was one of those, as a community bank, that smaller credit union, what I'm doing is I'm going to my providers and starting to say, hey, this is something we need to have.
No doubt.
Show me your roadmap. Show me where you're going to be building product that meets the needs of our consumers and our users, such that we're competing with the fintechs that are popping up.
Yeah.
There's kind of good news, bad news there. I mean, the good news is as soon as they build it, a lot of people get access to it almost overnight, right?
Completely.
And so, you know, I mean, there's implementations and there's rollouts, but conceptually, once they got it, they can turn it on for a lot of people all at once. But if I was in that situation, I'd definitely be talking to my providers and saying, hey, where's your roadmap? What do you got going on for the next 24 months?
Yeah, and I think the good side of that as well is that the smaller credit unions and the smaller banks, they're able to turn on it. They're much more nimble. They can do things quicker and stuff rather than the bigger guys. So they may have an advantage here. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, and it might even be that, you know, the smaller, the credit unions and the community banks that are not encumbered by that, they can be partners with some of these fintechs a little bit easier, right? They can do things that aren't, you know, so take so long to get done, right?
Mm-hmm.
Make partnerships and try and find ways to cooperate with the fintechs and bring them in as part of the the product set that they offer to their users versus having to compete with them heads up.
Yeah, I see a lot of that right now. All right, last question for you. Taking all this in, digesting it, what is the significance of all of this today? Is it capturing the consumer's attention, remaining relevant? What's the significance for financial institutions today with all this that's going on right now, this disruption?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to basics. I mean, we got to provide great products for our consumers, right? Yeah. We've got to provide things that they want and things that they need and things that they desire. And when you look kind of specifically at the migrant community, the community that I know most and that we work with here best, you can see an audience of people that need banking services but also have a really big need to move money home. Mm-hmm. And those are two hard things to pull together. There's a lot of individual solutions. And I think the big takeaway is you got to find ways to get them what they need, right? I mean, that's just good old-fashioned product development, good old-fashioned consumer behavior. My takeaways are go talk to your consumers. Go talk to your bank customers. Go talk mm-hmm. to your customers and say, hey, what is it that you're seeing in those credit union or in those fintechs that we need to have here for you as well? And so if you see it coming, you know, there's no better audience to go to than your own and say, hey, what are the things that we could provide for you? And if you can't do it yourself, we'll find you a fintech to partner with. I know that all the fintechs out there, they can say that they'll want to go out and build their own stuff their own. I'm also pretty confident that if you called up and said, we've got a bunch of consumers that are really wanting your product, would you make a partnership deal with us? I think those conversations are welcomed as well.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. You have an instantly engaged audience right there for you. So it's a good way to start out for sure. I lied. There's one more question for you. Give us a quick, before we let you go, give us a quick 411 on Brightwell. What are you guys all about? Give you guys a quick plug.
So Brightwell, we are a financial system for the global migrant community.
Okay.
So our product and our users have really been through the cruise industry over the last 4 or 5 years. And if you think about the cruise industry, it's one of these places that there's this financial problem on board that most people don't know exists.
Yeah.
And if you've ever been on a cruise ship, maybe you get a little experience to it. But if you take a cruise ship, take a Carnival cruise ship, right? Let's think Carnival as a bigger company.
Yeah.
They've got 30,000 people floating around at sea. And of those 30,000 people working on these ships day in and day out, 98% of them are from some country that it's not the United States.
Okay.
And they've chosen a lifestyle where, hey, I'm going to go work on this ship because I can make more money on this ship than I can, say, back in Southeast Asia.
Right.
Come payday, all they want to do is get that money home to their families.
Right, okay.
So where we provide banking services for them. So, hey, I've got a prepaid card. Your payroll just get landed into our account. Here's your Visa card. Here's your MasterCard. Now you can be a part of the digital economy. But now we also help you get your money home. And we do that. We accomplish that through a variety of partnerships that we have with some of the best money movers on the planet.
That's a great idea.
And so that's what we're all about. We're all about, hey, how can we help this kind of migrant worker, this global worker that is really away from home for one reason and one reason only, and that is to support their family members back home? How can we make it very easy for them to get access to their money and really support the families that they've so selflessly left to make a better life for them?
Yeah, kind of remittance from the middle of the Pacific. So something like that.
Our users, these ships are literally every time zone, every country,
every
port. It's a fun and very fulfilling task to be a part of kind of helping these folks get their money back home to their family.
That's such a good idea. I mean, I just love ingenuity and innovative, all this type of stuff. There's always a way to help people no matter where they are, what they're doing, that type of stuff. And you guys certainly filled that bill. Good stuff. All right, Larry. Well, thanks so much for your time today. This is such a hot topic right now. It's only going to get hotter in 2020. So I think we'll probably be talking again sometime next year. So, thanks again for the time. Appreciate it. And let's look forward to talking again next year.
Hey, thanks for the time.